Chapter 22, A Baby Falling from the Tree and the Peaceful Police Action. I want to clarify that I will be having my baby in about 3 months, and I hope Steve and I can get married before then. I'd like my newfound father to attend, too. I think they will have settled the dispute with Columbia by then. I am surprised we haven't been threatened, us knowing all about a possible police action in Colombia and a push by the UN to put some advisors into the government of Colombia. What's nice is that they are not using band-aids to fix the Colombian issue. Blame shouldn't be placed upon the lambs of the world. By that I mean especially because of his abuse by the mental health system, Steve and I have been blamed for minor mistakes for years, as if we've made major errors. Is it true that if you blame a symptom, in a way you are also blaming the defenseless or the lamb? I don't quite know how to say it. I will never feel separate from guilt. It is just like when people blame God for things. People can also accept more responsibility than they actually should be allotted. That is what responsibility means. I think Jesus might have thought exactly that as he died on the cross. The months passed. Maria, Steve, and the old couple had many dinners out celebrating, but still kept quiet as they had been instructed. One day, the group of them had gone to a Cambodian restaurant in the Outer Mission in San Francisco. As they ate, they watched the news on a television over the bar. A special bulletin was announced, and the president said that a covert operation had been run in Colombia. Hundreds of undercover agents had been sent over a period of months to raid the offices involved in keeping information on orphaned children in Colombia. He said that many of the orphans' documents were still held in secrecy. The Colombian government kept track of the orphans in hopes that, if they started plans to rebel at any time, they would be suppressed. The president said there had been a plan to have an American aircraft carrier visit peacefully in Colombia at the same time as the police action, but it had been a cover-up to get soldiers into Colombia. The president asked to be pardoned for his policies with Colombia for the past few months, relating to reducing surveillance of drug crops. This was so the Colombian government would be more willing to allow the Navy to visit Colombia, as if in total peace, promising easier relations. He told how they had openly planned to have a peaceful parade of troops outside the government buildings where the naval ships would withdraw all the troops who patrolled Colombia for cocaine trafficking. The reporter came on after the president's short speech. He added that a while back the covert march had been initiated and had passed the main government buildings where they had quickly and concisely attacked and performed quick police action. There was little violence and it had taken over all the government buildings with all the main officials in the buildings. They had used a special safe knockout gas to stupefy the Colombian army. Thusly, they were able to usurp the government with little more than a few shots fired. The reporter indicated that the president had said in another short speech not aired publicly that he had been a pacifist when he was young and hoped that he was still considered one for not having gone totally aggressive or attacking without consideration what violence would have done to the country of Colombia. The unaired speech also revealed that the reason the United States was temporarily taking over Colombia was that they were going to install UN officials within the government. Those officials would be responsible for hiring and firing individuals for the benefit of Colombia. They stared awestruck at the television. "We've made history. Now the history books will talk about us and kids will get to read about freedom for flower children. I know that's a silly way to look at it, but I think love is what has run this movement. I regret the shots that must have rung out in Colombia, but it was a pittance compared to what another president might have done," Maria said with her voice a bubbly faucet of Latin glee. "We'll have to call the FBI to see what they have to say. Hopefully within a week or two we can talk with Alberto and your father can join us to help start the telescope company and help us with our music and businesses," Steve suggested. "We need more help. I can barely stand all the work I have to do. I would like to go back to doing more music and less business." In the following days, the FBI contacted Steve and Maria to inform them that the blackmailing of Steve's kidnappers was successful, and they had gotten the second samples of DNA in Colombia as backup evidence that the painter was Maria's real father. After talking with the FBI, they announced that they thought it was as safe as it was going to get to allow her father to come to San Francisco. They recommended, however, that Steve and Maria shouldn't go public immediately, even though the public would soon know everything and that their names would be in most papers. Maria said that she would hide it from her friends to a reasonable extent to delay publicity, at least until Colombia showed signs of stability. Right after the FBI left, she called a number that Louise had given her to call when the coast was clear. "Our ordeal is over," he said, his relief evident in his voice. "Our divided house has been unified. It is too bad you couldn't see your mother. I haven't said much about her in our emails. I did mention that she had passed away. I think that the opposition poisoned her. Everything points to it. The doctor wouldn't do an autopsy, but he was friend enough to admit that he didn't think there were any signs of a heart attack or any disease, and that her skin was a funny color. Maybe I can take you to her grave now. I imagine you don't remember her. You were too young." "No, I don't," said Maria quietly. "I don't remember anything, but I would like to put some flowers on her grave." Louise nodded. "You mentioned that you wanted a Hindu wedding. For years I have believed that we are all one, much like you two, in a unified, undivided whole, like it says in the Hindu Upanishads. We are unified in the Atman. We are one with your mother this very second." "It's funny. We have lived such divided lives, yet none of us has denied the validity of this perception of unity. Somehow we are still like beautiful, meek mirrors of the One, and are capable of rising up to our God like Enoch did in the Bible. He was a man who was taken up to meet God in heaven." "You are my little queen," the painter said. Steve's mother, Bev, asked to be put on the phone for a second. She said, "I can't wait to see you again, Louise. If you make it here within a few weeks, you'll be just in time to help us launch the telescope company. We could still use you for the coarse grinding stage. We can slowly get you accustomed to the finer grinding stages and then the polishing. It's fairly straightforward. I'm sure you'll take to it easily." "I have been reading some books on amateur telescope making," Louise said. "I've learned a lot. I would like to learn how to use the Foucault test to determine whether the mirror has been polished to a parabola." "We'll be able to show you that almost right away. It's a rather simple experiment. I can't wait." Bev returned the phone to Maria. Louise said, "I will be in San Francisco as soon as possible. I will call you when I have my reservations." A few days later, he called to give them his flight schedule.